All right. Well, my name is Katie Miller, and I am related to them, actually, no. I am from Springfield, Pennsylvania, which is pretty much Erie. And if you don't know where that is, no one else does either, so it's fine. It's about as northwest as you can get in Pennsylvania without being in the lake or in Ohio. So that's where I grew up. I have... do I push a button or do you push a button? There we go. I have 5 siblings, and I survived childhood. I have 4 brothers and a sister, so if that explains anything from me, that is... this is us from last Easter. We dressed up like secret agents. We were all in black. But my brothers and I and my sister were all homeschooled. And my brothers did baseball while I did ballet. And I always said that I wanted to be a missionary. Just ever since I was probably 7 years old, I always wanted to be a missionary. Now, I wanted to be a missionary to India originally. And I'm actually going right now to Kenya, so don't be confused, and I'm going to explain it all. But I always said I wanted to be a missionary to India ever since I was very little. And I started doing missions trips when I was probably 13 or 14. And when I was 15, I asked my mom to go. I asked my mom if I could go to Asia, to Cambodia, on a missions trip. And you say, what did my mom say? Oh, sure, have fun. My mom is very laid back. She was kind of like, I have spare kids, you can go if you get lost, you know. I went anyway, and my mom actually had to come with me because I was only 15, and so I like to think that I got my mom into mission work because she's been all over the world with me now. But I started when I was 15 and haven't really stopped. I've been doing missions trips ever since then, and upon graduating high school, I knew I wanted to get into mission work, but I thought it'd be good to have a bit of a side job. You know, Paul did tent making, he could fall back on if the ministry work was a little slow. So I decided to get into nursing. And so I started my going to school for nursing, and about one semester in, my college and I had a bit of a moral disagreement. They asked me to do something I wasn't comfortable with. I said no, they said yes. I said no, and they said, well, we're done. Like, they kicked me out. And I felt like my world was kind of flipped upside down because I had a plan with God. Not that he had a plan with me, but I had a plan with God. And he just flipped everything upside down. And I talked to my pastor. I was like, what do I do now? And so she said, Katie, if you were my daughter, I'd tell you to get out. Like, go do mission work. You're not meant for Erie, Pennsylvania. So I took that to my prayer group, and I said, what do I do? Can you guys help me out here? And the leader of the prayer group just so happens to be an Indian woman. And she was like, let me get back to you. So she got in touch with one of her friends from India, whose parents still live in India. This is a little confusing. Her parents still live in India, and they go to the same church as a man who runs a children's home, which is in the same campus as a school. And so they got me in touch with the principal of the school, and that's how I got to India. So to help out with that, I have this beautiful drawing. This is my artwork. You can compliment me on it later. So this is me on the left with my stringy hair. I knew a guy who knew a guy whose parents knew a guy who knew another guy, and that's how I got to India. It was a wonderful God thing. But I talked to the principal, and I said, I want to come. And he said, we'd love to have you. Do you have a teaching license? And I said, no, I don't. And he was like, well, we need a dance teacher. Can you teach dance? And this is just such a God moment because I had been dancing since I was 3 years old. All through school, if you've ever had to drive your kid to sports, every year since I was 3 years old until I graduated and I had to actually stop for college just because of the scheduling stuff and everything. And I remember talking to God. I was like, really? Like, what was the point of that? Like, I had been dancing since I was 3 years old and for so long, and all the driving, the gas miles, the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it, why only to stop for college? And in this kind of God was like, this is why. Because I've been preparing you for this since you were 3 years old. So I got to go to India. Now you can switch it. And I actually spent 4 months there. I had a wonderful time with the kids and everything. This is my fifth grade dance class over here on the left. And then these are the children from the children's home over on the right. And it was just amazing. And I spent 4 months there until they said that I was a fair American child and could not deal with the heat of Indian summers. So they sent me back home. But upon coming home, I was once again at a bit of a loss of what to do. And I knew I wanted to do mission work. I always felt called to the unreached people of the world. But what next? And so my pastor once suggested I go on a missions trip that our church was doing to Kenya. And my first idea with that was, really? Like Kenya? Don't all missionaries go to Kenya? Like when you think of a missionary going to Africa, you think like Kenya and Uganda. Like I was kind of like, aren't they pretty reached at this point? Like I'm sure there are a lot of Christians there doing Christian stuff. Can I think of something a little more unique? But I was, you know, not convinced. But I went on the missions trip anyway, and it was just amazing. Here's the, we went to the Maasai tribe, and we built this big church in the background, and I didn't do it, but the other team did. The rest of the team did. And we got to go to a bunch of schools and do VBSs, and it was amazing because we planned for a few schools, but then when the other schools noticed that we were coming and doing VBSs, all the other schools wanted us to come. So we only planned for like two or three, and then suddenly we were doing a bunch more and, you know, driving along the road and, oh, guys, we're going to do a detour. We're going to do another VBS here. It was just amazing. And this was the very first Sunday in this brand new church and this brand new congregation. And if you've ever seen an African church service, it is totally different than an American church service. And it was just awesome. And at the end of service, the team was giving out little pamphlets and things, and this one grandma came up with her grandson, and she took the necklace off of her neck, put it on mine, and gave me this adorable little baby. And I was like, how did you know? That's exactly what I wanted to do right now, is hold this adorable little boy. And that was just, he's just the cutest thing. He melts my heart. But yeah, so then we did all this, and near the end of our trip, one of the last days, our team went back to Nairobi, which is the capital city, to see a bit of what the missionary has been working on. And he actually runs a Assemblies of God school in the city. And they teach elementary school children and English classes to the adults in the afternoons. And they're mainly there to reach the Somali population in Nairobi. Now, Somalia has been in civil war for many years. There's always been a bunch of unrest in the country. And Kenya has taken in the most amount of refugees. And in Nairobi alone, there's 350,000 refugees and second-generation refugees living there. There's 350,000 Somali people living there. And the majority of them are Muslim. So they might know Jesus as a prophet, but they don't know him as the Savior. And so this large group of people are very much unreached with the gospel. And so the team there has been working at the school and kind of gives us an in to the community and kind of an introduction to Jesus and trying to almost, convince the community leaders that we're okay. Because Kenya in general isn't very hostile to the gospel, but this kind of small community large community of Muslim people might be a little bit more hesitant to the gospel. And so my heart was kind of broken, and I thought that Kenya was pretty reached when God showed me 350,000 people not reached with the gospel. And I think it was kind of like a Moses and God moment where when Moses said, oh God, I can't go to Israel, I can't speak. And he said, that's okay, I have Aaron for you. And so I said, oh God, I can't go to Kenya, there's no one to reach there. And he said, that's okay, I have 350,000 people waiting for you. And so I was a bit more convinced in this, and so I plan on going back now, much more convinced, much more of a passion for these lost people, and I plan on working with the team there for at least a year or two. But this whole situation with Kenya kind of really reminded me of why I do mission work in general. It reminded me of why I do mission work. And this picture is actually one of the trips we did to Cambodia. That was actually beginning of last year. We did my third trip to Cambodia. And we were actually work with human trafficking victims, and it made me think of what Pastor David was saying this morning. But we worked with human trafficking victims and women who work the streets in Cambodia. And this trip was wonderful. We got to hold a banquet for these women who work the streets, and we were able to just give them a night off, you know, and we gave them amazing food, and we made these little gift bags for them. And it wasn't really much. It was a few toiletries, nail polish, and those kinds of things. But it was really wonderful that we were able to give these women a night where they could just sit and relax and be loved. And I think that a lot of times people like this are kind of cast to the side in society. People don't want to see that side of society. People don't want to see that part that is really hurting and broken. And so people try to not look at that, right? But God never shied away from these kinds of people. I'm reminded of the Samaritan at the well, where Jesus himself sought her out personally. And Zacchaeus, he sought him out personally, where the whole rest of society didn't want to see them. And this is kind of what we were doing with these women, that we were able to give them a night to just feel loved. And Jesus always made sure that the people he met felt loved and cherished. And this is why I do missions, because there are people that have been forgotten and cast aside, but Jesus never cast them aside. And because I was first loved, that I am then to love others. And so, I have another picture of these adorable kids in Kenya. They were just, love those kids, they're so cute. So I am headed back, and I'm going to be working with the team there at the school. So I ask that you pray for me and my team. I know that I heard from the missionary, and he said that they're having issues right now with reaching the Muslim men, and they've been a bit hesitant with the gospel. So if you could pray for them, and pray for me that I'm able to get there and raise the money that I need to get there. Assemblies of God has missionaries raising two different kinds of funds. We have to raise a lump cash amount to get plane tickets and there and back kind of thing. But we also have to raise a monthly supporter amount. And so I've been really working lately about the monthly supporters and people that are willing to come alongside me to reach these lost people in Kenya. So I ask that you pray about it and consider working with me with that. I ask also that you come along with me. And you say, wait a second, I'm not going to Kenya. What are you talking about? You start backing up there. But the lost people aren't only in Kenya. There are forgotten people throughout society, wherever you are. And if you pray to God, I'm sure he'll reveal those people in your own community and in your own city of Windber. So I ask that you consider and talk to God about who has been lost and forgotten in your city. All right, let's turn. One day, I was doing my Bible time, and I came across, I'm switching gears a little bit, I came across Psalms 37. It's an amazing chapter. And so I started reading it, and I just thought it was a really good chapter in the Bible. You can just switch to whichever. I came across Psalms 37, and the next day, it was such a good chapter, I started reading it again. And then, I don't know if you've ever done this, you read it again, and then again, and then again, and then again. And God started working with me to see this whole, well, it was a sermon. And I started thinking about David and his life. This is a Psalm of David. And you know, we can read through David's life in probably a few hours, right? But we can easily forget that this took years of his time. Like, this was his entire life. Years from when he became a shepherd, to when he was bullied by his brothers, to when he became a great soldier, to when he became king, to when his own son was trying to kill him. This was years and years spread out along a whole lifetime. And there were so many times I feel like in David's life where he had to wait for God. He was sitting in the fields. You know, I believe he went back to the fields after he was anointed king, right? He went back to the fields and still had to wait. And I mean, I just imagine him sitting in those fields year after year, waiting for God to do something in his life. And then he was running from his own father-in-law, Saul. I mean, that took so long. I mean, that was years of his life where he was running for his life. And he had to wait for God. And it just really made me think of, like, what we're waiting for with God. And I might be waiting to get to Kenya, but what are you waiting for? Are you waiting for that promotion at work? Are you waiting for that car that you've been saving up for? Are you waiting for God to give you a spouse, for children? What are you waiting for? And I think it's pretty universal, and all Christians will agree that waiting is the worst. No one likes waiting. I don't think anyone gets to the end of their life and you're, oh, you know what I could have done is waited a little bit longer. I would have loved to just have a little bit more time to wait for God. No one says that. No one says, you know what I'd love is more patience. I'd love to just wait a little longer. No one says that. Waiting is just the worst. You have to, it's boring. It's boring to wait. It's tiring, and oftentimes God's doing stuff in your life throughout it, so it's painful. But what happens in this waiting period with God? What does the devil try to say to you in this time? What does God speak over you in this time? And what are we to do as Christians in this waiting period? So I wanted to look a little bit into that today, with what the Bible says about it and what God says about it and what the devil tries to tell us. So one of the things that the devil tries to do in this waiting period is that he tries to separate us. He tries to separate us from our brothers and sisters in Christ, from their encouragement, from them talking over your life and speaking over your life. And he tries to separate you from God. And he tries to make you forget what he did in your life, make you not hear him well, and he tries to cloud your judgment. And he tries to even make you forget your own life, all those things that God has done in the past, all those other times where God has been faithful and brought things to pass. He tries to make you forget and separate from all of the things that could encourage you. And then next, he starts speaking into your ear. Often at night when you're tired and just want to go to sleep, he says things like, will God really give that to you? Will he really give you that promise that you've been waiting for? Will he really give you that blessing? And in this, he kind of tries to make us doubt God's character, right? Is God really someone that's going to give you those things? So I want to put God on the stand and observe his character. Is he someone that's going to be doing that for you? Jesus himself says to test the fruit of someone. We want to test the fruit of God. And he says that good trees only bear good fruit, and bad trees only bear bad fruit. And Jesus himself talks about his own character when he says that God is a good father, that good fathers, even on this world, give good gifts to their children. And if you as God's children ask for a blessing, ask for that promise, he's not going to be someone that's going to, he says, if you ask for a fish or for bread, I'm not going to give you a stone or a scorpion, that he is a good father. And so if God is this good father, oh, wait. See, now I'm getting off my notes. Don't want to get off the notes. We also can turn to our brothers and sisters and say, hey, when did God abandon you? When did God promise you something and then never talk about it again? And, you know, 5 will get you 10. Your brothers and sisters will say, oh, he never did that to me. Even if their story isn't finished yet, it's going to be. He's not a halfway finisher kind of guy. Like, if you look through the Bible, we can see that there was never a time where he said, oh yeah, I'm going to give you a great nation, or I'm going to give you these riches, or I'm going to give you this in your life, and then he just never talked about it again. There was always a finishing to the story. I mean, you've probably studied the Bible more than I have. Was there ever a time where he started something and then never finished it? I've never seen it in my studies of the Bible, but if you find it, let me know. But we can ask our brothers and sisters, and we can look in the Bible, and we can look about what Jesus said about his own character, and there has never been a time where God had abandoned his children. Which brings us to Revelation 12:11, which says that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimonies. The testimonies of your brothers and sisters, the testimonies of God, of what he said, and the testimonies of what the Bible shows. But if we look in Psalms 37, which is in fact what I came to, David himself talks about how God never abandons his children. If I can come to it now. Psalms 37, verse 25, 28, and let's do 34. Throw that in there. David says, I have been young and now I'm old. Yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging for bread. 28 says, for the Lord loves justice. He will not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever. But the children of the wicked shall be cut off. And then down in 34 it says, wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on when the wicked are cut off. So David says that he's lived his life. He's done so many things, and yet he has never seen God's people forgotten about or forsaken. There's never been a time where they are in need of something that God has not provided for them. And so God isn't really the kind of person to just leave you on the side of the road wanting something. And so we come to the next thing that the devil tries to say in your ear. And he says, is that really what he said? This is kind of the oldest trick in the book, right? Is that really what God said? Are you sure it's not the burrito you ate last night? Are you sure it's not just your own mind thinking things up? Are you sure you're just not one of those crazy Christians that you're just a crazy Christian? You didn't really hear that from God. Are you sure that's what you said or what he said? And I don't know what God has spoken in your life, but I do know and have looked into what God has promised his people in general. If I can use my words correctly, Paul says in Romans 8 that we are heirs of God, co-heirs with Christ. And we are promised this as God's children, to be his children. We are promised to be heirs of God. And in Revelations 21, verse 4, 6, and 7, we are promised this, that in the end he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage. I will be his God. He will be my son. So we're promised this, that in the end, at the end of the road, at the end of the race, we are promised no mourning, no death, that we are promised drink when we're thirsty, and that we are promised heaven, this paradise, right? This eternal feast. We are promised that in the end, we will get the reward. No matter what happens in this life, no matter how long you have to wait for it, we will get the prize. We will, at the end of the race, we will get the reward. And in Psalms 37, David himself says, coming back to it, He says in verse 4, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. And so he begins to, or wait. See, now I'm getting ahead of myself again. I start talking things. So he says, if you delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. And I think that oftentimes, even in this life, before heaven, God takes us farther than we had planned. We say, God, I want this blessing. I want this promise. And he says, that's great. I'm going to take you way farther than that. I said, God, I want to go to India. I want to be a missionary in India. He says, that's great. I'm going to do that when you're 18. Let's move on. I'm going to take you to Africa too. He says, I'm going to take you farther than what you had planned because I have planned greater things. He's such an over-the-top kind of guy, right? He's not someone to just leave you where you are or take you just to the promised and no longer. He takes you farther than you ever thought possible. And we see this in David's son Solomon, where David dies and Solomon is becoming king and he's nervous about it. So God says, I have one wish for you. What do you ask? And this is kind of a genie moment, right? The genie in the lamp, he rubs the lamp and he says, you get one wish. And like, I mean, if this is said to me, I mean, my mind would be racing. You could ask for anything. You could ask for great riches. You could ask to rule the world. You could ask to go to the stars. You could ask for anything. And Solomon says, I'd love to be wise and be able to fill my father's shoes and just be a wise king. And God was so pleased at this that he gave him everything else also. He gave him the riches. He gave him the wisdom. He gave him the lineage that he promised David to have the Savior of the world be in his lineage. And to this day, Solomon was known as one of the richest men to ever walk the earth. He just took him farther than he ever asked. Remember Hannah in the Bible, she asked for a son. All she wanted was a son, and she said that even if you give me my son, I will give him back to you. Not only did God give her one of the most renowned prophets in the Old Testament, Samuel, I almost said Solomon again, Samuel, he gave her 6 children after him. He didn't just give her that one promised son, he gave her 6 children after him. So the next thing that might happen is that you look to your left and you look to your right and you see that, well, your coworkers got their promotion. Your friends got their new car. And you look and you say, wow, everybody else is getting married. Maybe everybody else is having children. All the other people are receiving their blessing and their promises before you. And this is really hard because as much as you might try, you might start becoming jealous of your brothers and sisters. And jealous that they're getting their promises before you. And this, the devil might come to you and he says, I can give it to you sooner. What if I give you that promise and that blessing before God does? We see this most famously in Jesus himself. When he's in the wilderness and the devil comes to him and he says, I rule the world. I'll give the world to you if you bow down and worship me. I mean, Jesus gets everything in the end anyway. But the devil says, I'll give it to you sooner. And so Jesus obviously says no, and he quotes the Bible to the devil, and he says, I will not go against what God has planned. David himself actually had 2 situations that we know of like this. When David was on the run from his own father-in-law, Saul, that wanted to kill him, David and his band of misfits were hiding in a cave. When Saul came in and he was going to the bathroom, he was all by himself. And it was pitch black in this cave, and David was right up near Saul, so close that he could cut a piece of his clothing off. And in this, his commanders were saying, like, this is it. Kill Saul. Like, you can kill him. We can get over this. We can stop running. We can, like, go back to our families. This is perfect. And David could have done it in this moment. Like, he had the love of the people on his side. The people were saying, yeah, Saul killed thousands, but David killed 10,000s. And he had the love of Saul's own family on his side. He had all of this. He could have killed him in this moment. And yet, he said, I will not put my hand against God's anointed. I will not go against what God has planned. We see this again Later, where David was able to sneak into Saul's camp and was right above him, ready to kill him. But he says, no, I will not go against what God has planned. And so the next thing that might come up into your head is, oh, shoot, what if I mess this up? And this comes up in my head, oh, what if I mess this up? What if I don't say something I'm supposed to say? What if I don't do what God asked me to do in that moment? What if I say something ridiculous to the pastor and they hate me forever? What if I just do these things and I mess it up? And David himself messed things up when he loved this woman and he killed her husband and took her. And this is a terrible mess up in David's life, right? You could say he messed up royally. Okay, that's a bit. But thousands of years later, we can read about this great mess up in this man's life, this huge thing that he did. And yet, God worked through it. I mean, he still had to pay the consequences of his actions, but God still gave him the promises. He still had the lineage leading to Jesus. And it leads me to believe that I don't think we can mess things up. As Christians, I don't think we can mess things up. I think that God knows that we're human. He knows that we're going to do things that aren't exactly right. He knows that we're going to mess things up. He knows that we're going to make mistakes. I was telling my mom about this, and she says, God takes into account you're stupid. Those stupid mess ups in your life. He knows his players. He knows you. He knows what you're going to do, and he plans accordingly. He plans accordingly. So we can't mess things up if we have our heart towards God. And one of the things that, I'm going a little over. Sorry, Pastor. One of the things that I really noticed in David's life is that, I mean, he's known as an up and down kind of guy, right? If you've read the Psalms, you kind of know that he's having the worst day ever, and then he's worshiping God, and then he's having the worst day ever, and then he's worshiping God. He's kind of known as a roller coaster kind of guy. But I noticed that, like, no matter what happened in his life, he was running from his own stepfather, and later in life, he was even running from his own son that wanted to kill him. His own son wanted to kill him and usurp his throne. And even in this terrible moment with David, he was worshiping God. And I was like, wow. I feel like he could have been mad at God in that moment, but he was worshiping him, knowing that God had a plan through it all. And I think that we're called as Christians to worship God through it all, through those painful moments in life. And that's just such an inspiration to me and such a high standard to live up to when David worshiped. And the last thing I think God asks us to do is to sacrifice that dream and that promise and that blessing back to him. We see this famously with Abraham, that he had waited his whole life for a son. I mean, he was 100 years old when he finally got Isaac. He had been waiting his whole life for his promised son. And finally, Isaac was born, and this promised son was here, where God was supposed to make a great nation out of him. And then he says, yeah, I want you to sacrifice Isaac back to me. And like Abraham was like, oh, my promised son, and he starts walking this two or three day journey up the mountain with Isaac. And Isaac turns to him in this heart-wrenching moment of, Dad, where's the sacrificial ram? And I'm sure this just broke Abraham's heart. This is the one thing he wanted in his life. This is the one promise that God had for him. And he was supposed to kill him, kill the dream, give it back to God. And we know that Isaac was saved in the end. But this is what I feel like God has called us to do, is to sacrifice it back to him, to give the promise back to him, trusting in the way it's fulfilled, not in our idea of what things are supposed to look like, but God's idea of what things are supposed to look like. And trust God in the timing, sacrifice the timing to him. And this, what it does, I think, takes our focus off of the blessing and puts it back on the blesser. And we begin to live our lives to receive more of the Creator and less of the created. And our heart's desire begins to align with God's. And when we say that, and when David says to delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart, when you delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of his heart. Because your heart becomes his heart, and then he starts to work in your life. And so I want to read, last of all, from Galatians 6:9. And let us not grow weary for doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. At the end of the day, we win the race. We win the war. We get the promise. We will get what God has planned for us. No matter what goes on, no matter what happens, we win the prize. All right, so that's all I have for you. I actually, I have this bit of a tradition when I go to churches. When Jesus was talking to his disciples, he said to go out and take nothing with you and knock on the door of a town, and if they let you stay in that house, to let the presence of God rest on the house. And you guys have so kindly welcomed me into your house, into this house of God, and even to let me stay here and everything. And I want to pray a blessing over you guys, if I could, before I leave. And you guys are just so blessed me, and I want to bless you. So if we can pray. Dear God, thank you so much for this, God. Thank you for letting me come here, and thank you for bringing people here, Lord. Thank you for this church and for Pastor David and Rhonda, God. I pray your immense blessing over these people. I pray that the city of Wimber is blessed by these people, Lord, and that people talk about the Assemblies of God Church in Wimber, and they say, have you heard about that church down the street? Have you heard about those people? Because they are so blessed by you, Lord, that your blessing just oozes out to everyone around them, God. And I pray that you give them anything they need, Lord. I pray that you provide with your abundance and your amazingness, God. In your name, amen.